Welcome to Susie Petrozzi's Empowered Conversations. With over 20 years of experience as a clinical psychologist, Susie is an expert at taking people on a journey of personal growth and self-discovery. Join Susie as she talks to remarkable people who share their insights and lessons for living a purpose-driven life to inspire you and your own journey.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Empowered Conversations. I'm so excited to be back and I'm here with my first guest. I would like to introduce you to her. Her name is Tess. She's a paramedic in her early 30s, very passionate about helping people and learning about people's stories. Before this, she struggled throughout life, starting from a difficult childhood, leading to severe depression and anxiety as an adult. Now, having overcome all this, she has finally come to a happy and peaceful place within herself and can now embrace life fully and wholeheartedly. Tess, welcome and thank you so much for taking the time out of your super busy schedule to have an empowered conversation.
Well, thanks for having me, Susie. I'm humbled.
Absolute pleasure. Tell me how you got into that, because that has its own challenges and it's not for everyone.
With the whole paramedic thing, I guess in my adult life, I've sort of had a lot of different experiences with chopping and changing different jobs, different career progressions in different areas. I think the area that stuck with me most was when I was 19, I got a job as an assistant nurse in a group home. The aspect that I loved about that was just, it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. Like the aspect of helping people really, really appealed to me. So even after that, I broke out into other sort of areas of work. I think that it always stuck with me. And so I found myself sort of coming back to that area. Ultimately, what really sort of started the whole paramedic journey, though, was one of my cousins pretty much just said that she could see me doing the job and that I'd be good at it. She didn't sort of say why, but then I thought about it and what I really love about it is I love how every single job is different. So even though you might have your days where you have similar jobs, it's not ever the same. So usually you'll have, you'll go to a different house, different patient, different story. Every single job has its own different set of challenges. We're not stuck in the same office space for the whole day. I love getting outside. Some of our jobs are outside. So the part I love about the most is helping people in whatever way that is, because generally you're there in a time where someone deems themselves in a bit of an emergency. Even if you don't see it as one, it's what their mindset is in. And so just by you being there, I've been told, is quite reassuring for anyone. But then I also love the challenge of it. So there's lots of, there's clinical challenges, there's logistical challenges. And then, I mean, the part that's most rewarding is I just like to know where people have come from and what their situation is.
How do you, I mean, because usually when you're called out, it's an emergency, right? Generally speaking. And there's, I mean, when I, you know, as you're sharing that, I'm thinking about it, it's like, it's an adrenaline rush potentially. I mean, if I were in that situation, I suppose it would be for me not having had the experience. But how do you then stay open, Tess, to people's stories, you know, to who they are, because you've mentioned that.
I think, it depends on the job. Some jobs you don't have time to connect on that level because it is very
life or death.
Yeah. It's an emergency. Other times when that's not so much of a situation, there is time to sort of connect with your patient. Yeah, for me, I guess it's I sort of relate back to my own experiences as I was talking to you earlier, Susie, about I think it's a universal thing for us as people to struggle in whatever it is day to day. part of the human experience. You can't really come out of it without some sort of struggle, some sort of hardship, some sort of pain. I'm not saying that I wish pain upon anyone, but I think that's something
that we can all
sort of connect on.
Mm. So what you're saying is you're drawing that parallel between someone else's story and that element of compassion which you have, which is, you know, so deep within you, and then your own life and your own struggles that you've gone through. And because of that, having that understanding for someone and where they're at.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Yeah, it certainly helps me with the compassionate side of the job. I know that there are a lot of paramedics that over time get quite burnt out from the same sort of story from a lot of different patients again and again. And there are some people that come across as quite entitled and whatnot. But yeah, for me, I guess I just try and draw upon my own sort of compassion for whatever's led that patient to where they are now. You know, you can't really judge on someone's life. You're not them. You haven't been in whatever their position is. And yeah, I guess you just try and stay compassionate, try to stay like judgment-free as much as possible. And you just try to show kindness, I guess.
There's a lot, you know, like I really taking a moment to kind of think about this, being in that, what would it take to be in that situation to really be with someone, let's say if it's, you know, an emergency, to have to respond to that in the way that it's needed, you know, techniques, tools, whatever, like to help someone on that from that paramedic point of view, but then to also see that person, like to hold that other side, the human beingness in them. I think that takes a lot to have those two, if that makes sense, together to hold them. And I'm wondering whether this is something that's always been a part of you, Tess, or is this something that you've developed, whether it be part of your job or even part of your experience of, you know, going through your own life journey?
Wow, these are really good questions, Susie.
This is why I love empowered conversations. They tend to come through.
Yeah, wow. I know a lot of, again, it depends what jobs we get, but it's quite common in the health sort of field, like as a paramedic, sometimes you have to separate those things so you can actually do your job efficiently. You know, if we took on every single person's story would definitely, you know, you'd be burnt out at the end. It's too hard to take on every single sort of emotional aspect of every job. It's, you know, one of the coping strategies is you've just got to sort of be able to like let that go. I guess for me, I have a genuine interest in people. I don't know if it's something that's always been there or just a sort of recent development. I think I've always been quite an emotional, sensitive person growing up. But again, I just think it's I think it's one of those things, isn't it? Like to connect with another human being, it's, you know, we're social creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
connection's important to you.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's important to me. I mean, you know, this is part of connection, what we're doing now.
Yeah. And sometimes with some patients, you know, they actually, that's all they really need sometimes. Sometimes they just need someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think it's something to be ashamed about because that's a very innate human need.
This need for connection.
Yeah. The need for connection, talking to someone, having someone to listen to them, like, and if I can provide that, even though it depends what the situation is, like if I can provide that, just that little bit of a little bit of help, that gives me a lot of satisfaction.
Mm. And it's, you know, I really appreciate you saying the word shame in this context in terms of connection, because oftentimes we might not even consider that or even name it as such. But this need for connection, I mean, it can come in so many different forms, you know, as you say, to see someone, to, you know, to be able to speak to someone, whether it be, you know, a neighbor, whether it be whoever it is, about what might be going on for someone at that time. Like, you know, you're right, Tess, you know, there should be no shame in that, but there often is, you know, whether that be driven through social ideologies or whether that be driven through the individual's minds, and often the two are intertwined. Can you speak more to that? Because I want us to be able to, and I don't mean just us, but as a society, to not let shame dictate what we do or don't do, because I think it creates bigger problems. Can you speak more to shame, and maybe even shame around your own journey of, you know, having gone through anxiety and depression? What was the hardest thing around that for you?
One of the hardest things was accepting mistakes that I may have made and forgiving myself. I think on the topic of shame, I think we have to accept that no one's perfect, and part of life's journey is learning along the way. So you're going to make mistakes, you're going to fall over. It's a matter of how you get up from that, how you move forward, how you forgive and let go.
Mm.
So yeah, certainly for myself, you know, I've had a lot happen to me growing up. I've made really poor choices as a young adult, and, you know, these things are going to live with me forever. But instead of letting that dictate who I am or where I go, I've had to come to a point where I acknowledge that it's all happened. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge it. I have compassion for myself, for the suffering that I've gone through. But then I've also been able to try and forgive and let go, move on from it. Like, I think that's really important skill, that maybe a lot of people sort of struggle with.
But, you know, when you say, because you've hit the really key, you've hit the key word here, which is letting go. It's one thing to know, let's say, that I need to let go, that we need to let go, but it's another thing to be able to do it, to let go. Can you kind of talk me through the difference between the two for you in terms of, you know, let's say knowing that you had to do that and then doing it? I know that it's not like one process as such. I've learnt that from people, and certainly, you know, my own process of letting go that I continue to have to do throughout life. But I'm just curious in terms of your own experience of it.
Oh, haven't quite thought of that. So I think if you're aware that you need to let go of something, but you haven't yet, then that's just a case of you haven't quite accepted it yet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah. I don't know how else to frame it, because
maybe that's enough, right?
Yeah, I think it is quite as maybe. Simple as that. You just haven't accepted it at that point, even though you know whatever it is needs to, yeah, be let go of.
That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I would say, in my own experience, when we know we need to, the process starts somehow. So thank you for naming that one, because I think that people, sometimes we need to hear it, and people, hopefully people need to hear it from this conversation, and have an honest, you know, kind of truth telling with themselves about that, whatever that may be.
Well, as you said, it's a process. Everyone's going to process whatever it is at different speeds, different ways.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, well, some for some people it might just be a straightforward, you know, switch.
Mm.
For others it may take a lot of time, but it is just that having that awareness is the first step.
Mm. How do you, Tess, foster or cultivate your own awareness around your needs, particularly emotional needs, because they're the ones that tend to sometimes be pushed into the background? I don't mean you, but generally speaking.
Mm.
So how do you cultivate that awareness of your own needs and what you need at a given time or not?
Well, I think it's taken quite a while to actually recognize what those needs are. The first step is probably always the hardest, actually just recognizing that if something doesn't sit right with you or if there is a need for something, sometimes you're not aware of it.
Mm.
As soon as you are, I guess it's pretty hard without an actual example, isn't it? I'm just trying to think of how to. Well, the first step is awareness. What was your question again? How do you foster
awareness of your own emotional needs? But and I say particularly emotions only because they're the ones that we sometimes tend to push aside, particularly the difficult ones.
Yeah, so I guess I've gotten a lot better at recognizing what my emotions are at any given point.
Okay, so recognizing emotions, knowing what they are, even like naming, labeling, whatever it is.
Yeah, like for example, if what someone says is irritating to me, I don't know, you can kind of feel when that irritation starts coming. What I do is I don't like to direct any of that on someone because, well, in this example, with terms of irritation, anger, it's not a good emotion to sort of reflect off onto someone else because that just perpetuates even more of that. But as soon as I recognize it coming on, it's like, okay, I'm recognizing it and it's got nothing to do with this person, and how do I pacify the situation just so that I'm not taking it out on someone else? I don't know if that quite answers it for you.
Well, does it answer it for you?
Yeah, I guess, long story short, I think you respect how you're feeling and it's okay to feel that way. But I think it's really important that you communicate that to someone else, that you might be feeling a particular way, but it's not necessarily at them personally.
Yeah. So in what you've said, there's actually a few different things, right? There's the recognition of what you're feeling. Whether you need to identify that out loud or not depends on the situation. If you do need to say it out loud, then there's the ability to be able to communicate that in a way that reflects your own emotional experience and doesn't, you know, project it onto them.
Yes, correct.
And I feel like there's maybe also what we might be touching on here, or what you're touching on here, also boundaries, the kind of boundaries that come in around, this is about me, you know, really owning that, but more boundaries almost with yourself, like this is about me, this is not about them, you know. Sometimes it is about others. I want to be clear on that. But I just wanted to touch on that. Does that also relate to some of that? Or can you speak a little bit about that? Because I think boundaries are like a thesis on their own, right?
Gosh, yeah. Boundaries is only something that I've recently come in contact with. Quite honestly, I could say most of my life, boundaries has never come up for me until like my last relationship, then boundaries came up and I'm like, what are they talking about? I genuinely didn't know. Boundaries. So, well, part of boundaries is recognizing what your needs are. So when you recognize what your needs are, that's when you can actually communicate to whoever it is and sort of say, hey, like, this is what I'm okay with or what I'm not okay with. And it's all about self-respect as well. You've got to respect yourself enough to put those boundaries in place in the first place.
Yeah, I love that. There's a real sense of agency in your voice when you say that. And I know that, Tess, it wasn't always like that around that. So can you share with us a little bit about what's helped you along the way? You know, when you reflect back, what were some of the things, whether that be, you know, philosophy, you know, certain principles that you've taken on board for yourself or activities, you know, what has helped you to navigate, you know, challenges, anxiety, depression, those things that were a big part of you having to learn about yourself?
Again, a really good question. I think I dove into a lot of like areas of self-help books, but sort of nothing stuck to me more than, say, a lot of Buddhist philosophies, a lot of Buddhist principles, I think, helped guide me. So part of the process for me was I had to look back, like way back, to say my childhood and my childhood trauma and how that sort of affected me growing up, how it affected my way of thinking as an adult, and recognizing that all of that sort of shaped me, but it wasn't necessarily the way of thinking wasn't necessarily helping me now. So it was a bit of a slow sort of unraveling process. And with the Buddhist philosophies that I was reading up on, and most of the time they were just quotes, to be honest. But they just gave me a lot of clarity, a lot of comfort. In terms of navigating my headspace. Because I'm so much in my head already, I've already lost track of what the original question
was.
I
hear a few things in response to the question, which was, you know, what were some of the things that helped you navigate your journey around anxiety, depression, but also challenges? And one of the key things that I heard, or at least this is how I interpret it, was learning about things that can help support you to get better, learning about yourself. And what you found really helpful were Buddhist principles, even if they were just quotes, but they were still words, right? Because words are, whether they be written or spoken, words are healing. They have the potential to be healing to the degree that we're open to them. So if you can draw on, and, you know, I kind of feel like you've mentioned those, but if we can draw on a few of those principles for you that now guide you in terms of particularly the Buddhist principles, what would they be?
Wow, there's so many good ones. I'm just trying to rack my brains as to which ones sort of resonate with me the most.
This is fantastic. It's the silence is the first one. I love this. So I was just thinking, how beautiful is this?
Yeah.
To just be. Isn't it?
Well, that was quite unintentional, but.
Well, there you go. I love that. Just to be, because oftentimes, Tess, and sorry to detract from what you're saying,
no,
but oftentimes I will be like two steps ahead of myself, right, in my head. Missing the pivotal moments, missing the pivotal qualities of a moment. And in that moment, I just couldn't help but notice that it's like, well, Susie, duh. It's this, Susie, the things that cannot be, not because I'm answering for you, but I'm wondering, you know, it's almost like the things that cannot even be named.
Yeah, well, my mind is just like this. There's just so many good ones. One that comes to my mind in terms of when you communicate to someone else, you know, it says before you say something to anyone, like give thought to is it necessary, is it true, and is it kind? So I guess in a way, sometimes silence is the best sort of answer, because if it's not true, if it's not necessary, and if it's not kind to someone else, maybe it isn't worth saying.
Yeah. I love that. Is it necessary? Is it true? Is it kind? Wow. The three. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that I usually turn to that, I think, when I can feel myself getting riled up or agitated in some way, and it's just kind of like stop, pause for a second and think, you know, because I don't want to make a situation worse. And usually when we talk out of anger, you yeah. can definitely make it worse if you're saying something that's not really, you know, very kind to someone else, and that just sort of, yeah, causes a new sort of thing for the other person.
Yeah, a reactionary cycle, just like a ping pong keeps going, isn't it?
But now that we've been talking about that, I think the biggest take-home lesson for me with Buddhist philosophy is that impermanence is a part of life. So you have to accept that nothing in life stays the same. The world it's always changing. So, you know, when Buddhists talk about the root of all suffering is attachment, it kind of aligns with that. So we have to accept that one day the people that we love and care about will die. That's a fact of life.
Yeah.
It's not to say that you're happy with that, but it's just accepting that everything comes to an end, and that could also be on not just, you know, death, something extreme as that. That could be just, you know, you might be going through a happy stretch in your life, but life is always going to throw challenges or hardships your way. And then when you're going through those hardships, it's like always good to remember that that's not going to be like that forever. You know, it's impermanent. That's just it's a current state.
Yeah.
So I guess that gives me comfort in knowing that, like, when you're going through a hardship, it's like, well, this isn't forever. This is just for now.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it just helps with acceptance with a lot of different areas, you know, whether that be as like a relationship breakdown as well. You sort of, it's a way of accepting that that's a part of life. And instead of focusing so much on the negative aspects, like, be grateful for all the good things, or the good times, or the good things in your life. Practicing gratitude is important as well.
Thank you for sharing that. So you've mentioned compassion in the way that we speak to someone. So through, is it necessary? Is it kind? Is it, what was the other one? Necessary, kind.
There was true.
True. Thank you. And through impermanence, you've talked about really on non-attachment, so detachment and acceptance, and then gratitude.
Yeah. You know,
being grateful really for what we have, for where we are. And that takes a lot of changing of perspective if we can't see how grateful we are. So can I ask you, I'm just wondering how much has your job, you know, and being a paramedic and seeing people, what influence has that had on your own learning about yourself?
Actually, I'm glad you've asked this, because it has been something I've been thinking about lately. So in my job, we come across people from all walks of life. And I acknowledge that my childhood was a bit, you know, rough, and I went through certainly a lot of trauma. But then you go to these jobs and you go to some people's, you know, situation in their life, and you think, gosh, there's always someone else who has it way, way, way more rough. So in these circumstances, I've found myself feeling so much more grateful for what I did have, you know, the things that I did learn at a young age. And, you know, even though my parents were somewhat quite absent, you know, there was still, you know, love there. There wasn't, I didn't have, like, for example, just throwing this example out there, there wasn't like alcohol or drug abuse in my home. So again, I guess I come to these jobs and I recognize, or I have more compassion for, you know, for example, if the household where there is a problem with like drugs and alcohol abuse, and then there's young kids there,
yeah.
I think about, you know, maybe their parents started in a similar situation and that's all they've ever known their whole lives,
yeah.
You know, and it's hard to break from that, because if that's all you've ever known, that's where your family is, that's where your social networking is, and
like your belonging.
Your belonging. That's like,
yeah.
As humans, again, it's important. Connection is very, very important. Without that, you know, you kind of, where you feel alone, and that's one of the hardest things about being human. But this is their life, and I'm not saying that this is not a doomsday kind of thing, but.
No.
It's definitely hard to break out of that mold if that's all you've ever known. So therefore, when I go to those jobs, I don't judge, or I try not to judge, because I understand that if that's all you've ever known, it's hard to break out of that. It takes a very strong, independent and aware personality to break out of the cycle and to make a different future for themselves.
Yeah. So it's given you like really seeing people in different contexts, you know, living different lives. It's given you, I suppose, a different perspective, but also appreciation on your own life.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
Given your learnings, given where you are now in life, what do you hope for what's to come? Or maybe I can ask, what is your vision? What vision would you like to hold for the rest of your life?
Well, I hope to have, you know, many more years as a paramedic. But moving forward, given that I feel like I've overcome a lot of challenges and obstacles in my life, I think it's kind of, I don't know, a calling of sorts, where I feel the most fulfillment when I'm helping someone else. And I seem to naturally feel more connected with other people that have also been through a lot of trauma, because the more you start talking to people, the more you start learning about their lives, and then you learn that like everyone's got a story in terms of whatever struggles they've been through. So I think what I want to do moving forward is I always want to stay in some sort of profession where I probably have hands-on with helping people in some capacity. You know, as I'm less physically able, because, you know, being a paramedic can be quite physically taxing. I was thinking about maybe moving in towards like psychology or something along those lines, because it's quite a fascinating area, just learning about how the mind works. And then sort of the part that really gets me is putting that into practice and actually helping people through their healing process.
Yeah.
The other thing that I've been thinking about lately is how can I find a way to, I want to sort of foster a community. That sounds a bit. So I think in this modern era, I think even though we've got all this technology connecting people across the globe, et cetera, I think more than ever people are disconnected, because with that comes like people are less inclined to pick up the phone, talk to each other. Instead, it will be a text message, or people don't meet up with each other as frequently because you put your daily posts online instead. So you don't put that effort to actually catch up face to face. And I think, I really do think that there's, a bit of a mental health crisis at the moment growing from that because there's such a lack of connection. Mm. Growing up in Sydney most of my life, I think the grind of Sydney is people generally tend to keep to themselves, have hustle, bustle, busy lives, and that's okay. It's just I think there's just a lack of a community-based connection. Like you don't know your neighbours anymore. You know, you don't know your local community anymore. And I think that's a sad thing. I think that's something that we need to sort of revive's not the right word, but certainly nurture and foster and just sort of change the mentality around like just saying hi to a stranger, you know, or like so I don't have a strong plan in mind, but I do want to get more involved with community projects and community projects that ideally would bring more people together, bring more people in and feeling more sort of part of a group, whether that be like a sport or maybe even something to do with improving the environment. So maybe like planting seeds or something like a community garden would be really nice, I think.
Yeah, that would be an amazing initiative given given the mental health crisis because of that increasing disconnection and given your you know that I suppose inherent sense of wanting to be part of something where you can help others. I think it's, you know, it's a matter of time and your journey, but also it sounds like you're thinking about this quite intentionally to be able to know where to direct that, and how to direct that, particularly being involved in nature. I mean, that's, wow, I've been reading so much more on that. That's right. I'm reading the book by Julia Baird, Phosphorescence, which is beautiful, which is all about that connection with nature and animals and water and mountains. And it really, it kind of makes me think about what you're saying and the importance of that, how we are disconnected from awe, you know, how often are we in awe of what's around us? So look, I know that whatever endeavor you find yourself in, that your composure, your insight and that attunement to people will help you, will help you, do what it is that you want to do and also feel fulfilled by that as you continue though looking after yourself. Cause I think that's such an important part, isn't it? To not be burnt out by wanting to help others. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all a bit of a balancing act. Like, you know, again, you can't take on all the world's problems or everyone's problems because at the end of the day, you do have to look after yourself. So I guess you've got to recognize, you know, when you've got to put a boundary for yourself and,
yeah.
But yeah, I guess it is a bit of a personal passion of mine. It's an area where I can see there can be improvement on. Certainly in my day-to-day job, I do see a lot of lonely people just not necessarily having enough support.
Yeah.
And I think we can all relate to that at some stage of our lives, feeling that.
Of course we can, Tess. Yeah, of course we can.
Yeah.
So, okay, so maybe a question to finish up on in terms of questions from me. If you were walking along, you know, down Norton Street, because that's where we are now in Leichhardt, in heart of Inner West, or sort of heart, I don't know what the heart of Inner West is in Sydney. But say you're walking along and first person that you walk past, what question would you ask them? What would you want to know about them? And therefore, what's the first question you want to ask them?
You mean without sort of
without
like, you know, coming across as a bit strange?
Yeah.
I guess I'd like to know. I'd like to know where they're heading off to. You know, like where if they got to go.
Mm. Yeah. I love that. It's always like, it's like the questions that we love to, or what we love to know about people is, where are you from? Where are you off to?
Yeah.
It's like we're traveling when we travel, which reminds me, okay, one more question, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's...
You're a fan of traveling adventures.
Yes. Yeah,
and you've been on quite a few. Is there a destination in mind? Is there something that you're heading off to?
Next month I'm heading off to Iceland, which I'm very excited about.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
How cool is that? Cool, literally cool.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very cold compared to here, because I think it's during their winter, basically. So I think they only have like 5 hours of sunlight in this time.
What drew you to Iceland?
I guess I've seen some video footage and photos here and there, and it just looks like this land that's so untouched, like so raw, so beautiful. You know, not many people occupy that land, and it's quite difficult to live in because of the extreme weather. I guess there's just a beauty in a place that, you know, there's less people around. You know, we haven't polluted it. It's just such a different landscape to what we're used to over here.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. If only, you know, more time and more money, I'd love to like travel to even more places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. You've taken me there already.
Yeah.
Tess, all the best on your traveling adventures and just in life generally. I'm so grateful for this conversation. Any kind of last words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think the answer is to always be kind and compassionate to others and yourself. I think they're the most important things to life.
I love that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Susie Petrozzi's Empowered Conversations. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe. Leaving a review helps others find the podcast. And for more information, visit susiepetrozzi.com.